Good morning. I'm going to call the special meeting of the Finance Committee, February 29th, 9 o'clock to order. We have a couple of things on our agenda. You want to start with the budget?
Yeah, and I wish I had more information on the 24-25 budget, but there are a lot of moving parts with the budget that we're still working on. We've been having operational...
Excuse me, I'm sorry. So did we skip item two, which is our budget to actual financial report?
Oh, we're not covering that on this one because we haven't finished the...
Okay.
Today's the last day.
All right, thank you.
So we have a special agenda that is straight into the 24-25 budget.
Okay.
And then the 2021 audit.
So I didn't have the corrected version, apparently, of the agenda. Thank you.
Sure. So we're still gathering rates and data regarding the staffing costs and all the other costs. And so we're hoping to have that by the next Finance Committee meeting. And I think the only other thing that I really wanted to talk about with regard to the 24-25 budget is that historically, that capital improvement plan has been integrated into the budget, and even some capital projects have been part of the operating budget. And with the anticipated third phase of the IWMP and the potential for capital improvement projects that arise out of that, and the timing of that, which is likely to not be before June, that all the votes, all the activity and all the vote from the board occur. We're kind of targeting now maybe the end of May for a town hall, and then having the board actually have a couple of sessions at which they can look at IWMP Phase 1, Phase 2, and the new information from Phase 3, and then have another session where the modeling is discussed, and then have another session where there's actually a decision made. And in between there would be, you know, community input. So that whole effort means that the ideas about what would be authorized for capital improvements would not happen until sometime in July or even later. And so my plan for the 24-25 budget is to have it be targeted just at operational expenditures with operational revenue and property tax revenue, and then to capture all that and to handle the CIP as a separate plan, as a separate standalone budget in July or August. And so that's sort of where I'm going in terms of thinking about how to handle the CIP budget and the timing of all the activity related to the IWMP.
It makes sense logically. I would ask that you just check with council to ensure that we're not obligated to develop and approve that budget before June 30.
Okay, I will do that. Good.
What about the consultant's role in that CIP? We have somebody...
Yes.
Theoretically working on it.
Yes, that's another reason. So there are a couple of different consultants that are at play here. One is the IWMP consulting firm Adkins, and then they are primarily responsible for the, you know, the three phases and the model and all that. And simultaneously, there is a consulting firm called Lumos, which is doing the 20-year assessment of physical plant needs, and that will be sort of a state of how everything is currently, all the resources, all the physical plant. But the recommendations that arise from the other consultants will be woven into that Lumos one, depending upon what is blessed by the board, you know, as we move into that phase of the IWMP process. And so I think it's premature, that, you know, to do that until you get that Lumos information, which will have more of the actual hard numbers for the regular stuff, and then the IWMP costs. And I've asked that be kind of on an a la carte kind of basis, so you can see, well, if you do this, it's this amount, this, so you can have a better handle on what the costs would be before you decide, you know, on any one item in the options for phase three.
Well, there's another relevant contract that I don't think we've heard anything about since the contract was approved by the board, and that's the Yost West contract. It relates peripherally to the Integrated Water Master Plan. Specifically, some assessment of the ability to tap into Clementia, if I recall correctly.
You're right. That's a they're evaluating the drinking water capability of Clementia, and whether or not and they're working with the Department of Drinking Water on what it would take to make the Clementia water be potable.
Well, and intuitively, I think we all know that in order to do that, there would need to be infrastructure modification or build out, which would potentially feed into the CIP.
That's true.
So is there any coordination going on between those three pieces?
So my understanding is that the West Yost folks are sharing their information with the Adkins people so that can be integrated. But I have not heard an update on the West Yost for some time, so I'm going to add that as an action item for me to get an update on that.
And I ask them that we have that update at the next board meeting?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
So if we have to have some by the 1st of July and we're not making it, can we not just carry forward some of the old CIPs?
Yeah, we can. I have some concerns about how the CIP was put together for 23-24. Mm-hmm. I think it was there was a time crunch. You know, staff was there were holes, there were vacancies, and so we didn't ever have source of funding information in that capital improvement plan, which I think is the biggest flaw. And so I think we could update that CIP and actually assign funding to it,
mm-hmm.
if it was if it was possible. So okay, so that's about where I'm at with the 24-25 budget.
Okay.
Okay. Do you want to move on to the next topic?
Please. Unless Steve has another question.
No, thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to pass the baton on this one to Mark, but before I do, I just want to commend Mark for his diligence on this. We had been working on the 2021 audit, I believe, since about summer of 22. And so it took quite a long time, really almost 2 years. I think that's very rare for an audit to take that long. My experience is it's usually a few months. But it was sort of passed around a lot. And then we had picked it up last summer and lost staff. And it's a fine audit. It's a qualified audit. But the qualification that is in it really relates to failures to book different items that were donated to the district from quite a long time ago, because the board now does recognize a donated infrastructure and book it, and so that I think is our primary audit finding. And the auditors felt that would take a long time to clean up because we don't know how far back that didn't happen. But in general, there's a lot of forward motion that can now happen now that this audit is done. And I'll let Mark delve into the details of it with you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, as Mimi said, the fiscal year 2021 audit is complete. We can spend some time this morning going through the audit report and the financial statements and the other parts of the package. I've got some remarks just hitting some of the high points and some of the more significant items, and then we can open it up to any questions that you guys have. So if we take a look at page one, that's the independent auditor's report, and that's where the auditors provide their opinion on whether the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of each of the district's operating funds. The report also discusses correction of errors and adjustments to net position from fiscal year 1920 and those financial statements. And then it discusses the responsibility of staff and the responsibility of the auditors, as well as comments on required supplementary information and other reporting required by GASB, the Government Auditing Standards Board. So the district received an unmodified opinion, which that's a clean opinion or a clean audit, if you will, on the drainage and the solid waste and security funds. And I think we mentioned this before. Basically, the district is like five separate businesses, and that adds some layers of complexity to the accounting. But so for those three lines of business or those three parts of the operation, it was an unmodified opinion, no material issues noted by the auditors there. And then, as Mimi mentioned, the district received a qualified opinion on the water and sewer funds. And what that means is that except for a specific matter that the auditors discuss here in their report, the financial statements were presented fairly in all material respects. And that specific matter, if you want to look specifically, it's under the basis for qualified and unmodified opinion section of the report. And it's due to the lack of methodology for valuing and recording easements and developer-donated infrastructure as capital assets. And really what that is when a developer comes into the area and does a development, and they put a lot of infrastructure related to the services that the district provides underground, and when they're done and they start selling their houses or businesses open up, you know, that developer's out of the picture and they've moved on, and they donate that infrastructure to the district. So it's an on paper transaction. It's important to book it, and as Mimi said, we have a mechanism in place to do that prospectively, and then there's a bit of a project to go back historically and pull that information together and get it on the books.
And Mark, is that so mostly it is underground, as you said, we understand that. So then does the district then hold an easement in the property, but we own the infrastructure itself?
So I think it's case by case.
Okay.
Most of it is just a straight grant of the infrastructure. Like there's pipes underground, there's, you know, whatever built into this project, and district, you now own it.
But we must maintain easement for access.
In some instances, we definitely would. You'll see in this financial statement specifically, there was a $4,885,000 adjustment from an easement the district received back in 07-08 to irrigate out on a pasture.
Van Vleck.
So,
the Van Vleck
Van Vleck spray field, mm-hmm. Yes, the Van Vleck pasture out there. So sometimes there's special easements like that could be one-off things that
okay.
have happened in the past, and then some of it's just a straight grant of property, plant, and equipment in like pipes or whatever infrastructure was built into place.
Okay.
The district. So we talked about that. There's a process in place, and as Mimi said, there's the board will actually approve accepting the grant of those items. That's something that you all have probably been involved in recently. So if we move on to page four, this section is that management discussion and analysis. And really, this is management's or staff's opportunity to present some highlights of the financials. A lot of it is comparative, current year to prior year, and just talking about, bless you, talking about what went on and what's coming, if there's anything of note to mention. So this is a good place to really kind of talk about the financials because there is that comparative analysis here, and then we'll go through the other financial statements and the footnotes. So,
Mark, in that first bullet, would you explain how those numbers work? Because I see a $37.6 million net position. Mm-hmm. I see a restriction at $7.9 and then a deficit of $665,000. So how do those numbers interrelate, if at all?
Yeah, so net position for the district, and actually that's a great question. So let's flip over to page number 11 and 12. And if you open the book, it should be kind of like a landscaped view. And so you see across the top, we've got the five operating areas, the five funds, and then a total column on the far right. And this is the statement of net position, or the balance sheet, as it's commonly called. And if you look at the very bottom, that section there is net position. And what net position, it's basically equity, right? It's assets minus liabilities. So for the district has three categories of net position. The first category is net investment in capital assets. So that's all the property, plant, and equipment that the district owns, net of depreciation, and then less any outstanding debt used to acquire those assets, okay? And then the second category there, this is really when we talk reserves of the district, this second line, restricted for capital projects, that's the district's reserves, right? I mean, that's the money that has been set aside for water augmentation, for capital improvements.
Where are we on the page, Mark?
Oh, at the bottom.
On 12 over on
11
the far
and 12.
Right. The 7 million.
Oh, I see. The net position category. Got it.
Yeah.
I haven't scrolled down far enough. Thank you.
Yeah. And then the last line item there is unrestricted. And that's the district's, basically, that's the district's operating money. That's the equity or the retained earnings, if you will, or the net position for an entity like the district is what it's called. But that's the unrestricted operating reserves to do the day-to-day operations. And this is what we talked about in January, was that in the financial statement that ended 6/30/2020, several of those unrestricted net positions were negative, that actually significantly negative. So that's when we talked about it, and the board made the decision to reallocate some of those discretionary funds to clean that up. And you can see that has been accomplished here. We don't have any negatives now. Well, there is one negative, and I will say in the water fund, that negative is the balance of the notes that the water fund took out, intra-fund borrowing, if you will. So back a couple of years ago, or a couple of years before this, the water fund borrowed from water augmentation, that pot of money, and then also borrowed from the sewer fund capital improvement pot of money to expand the water treatment plant. And so because it's negative, if you have a negative balance in any specific pot of money that has a restriction, just the accounting rules say you have to classify it as unrestricted. So that's really the only reason there's a negative in that unrestricted line now.
So that's a debt owed at the end of the 2021 fiscal year.
I don't think that's going to be fully paid off at the end of 2021.
Well, I'm saying it was owed.
It's the outstanding balance. Yes, you're absolutely correct. And,
okay.
and I think the good news story of that is, you know, that's the only reason there's a negative in that line now. And there's a revenue stream that's been put in place to service that debt. So it's that $6 a month fee. So I think this is looking like the district is in pretty good shape here. Okay. So that's a great question about that net.
It's better than my budget at home.
Okay. So if we're looking at page four there, the MD&A or the management discussion analysis, we can kind of go through some of this. Yeah, and if you guys have questions, we can jump around. So the assets of the district exceeded liabilities at the close of fiscal year 2021 by $37,618,771. And then also to further illustrate that, if you flip back to page 12, if we kind of flip back and forth between these statements, back on page 12, down in that bottom section that we just talked about, net position, you can see the second number from the bottom there. That's your $37,618,771. Okay? And so of that amount, $7,910,035 is restricted for capital projects. And again, if you flip back to page 12, you can see that number depicted there on that middle line item for net position. And that's the reserves. That's the district's reserves. Leaving the district with an overall deficit of $665,287 in unrestricted net position. But that includes the deficit of... I apologize. So that's water. The grand total of unrestricted net position. Included in the deficit in unrestricted net position is $791,404 related to the interfund borrowing that we just discussed from water augmentation and sewer capital improvement reserves in a prior fiscal year for construction of the water treatment plant or expansion of the water treatment plant. So net of the negative impact from the interfund borrowing, the district had a positive balance of $126,113 in unrestricted net position. So that specific item about those negative unrestricted net position balances in the funds that we talked about in January and the board took action on that, this just demonstrates that cleaned up those negative balances, which is a good thing. So the district's total net position increased by $5,002,885 during the 2021 fiscal year. Restatement of for correction and errors accounted for increases of the $4.8 million and the $441,000 in net investment and capital assets and unrestricted net position, respectively. The district grew reserves restricted for capital projects by $632,159. So we talked about the $4.8 million. That was a correction to book an easement that was received back in fiscal year 7-8. And then the $441,000 correction, that was a prior year correction to correct a misclassification of delinquent payments that were actually booked to the Community Facilities District, and they really belonged on the CSD books. So, and if you were to pull the CFD financials for this specific year, you'll see the reverse of that prior year adjustment on those books or on that financial statement. And that one was issued, I think, a while back.
So the $4 million increase is on paper. It's not liquid, right? Because it's physical assets. And then the $441,000, is that actually cash?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we flip over to page 6, this is, again, it's just a comparative of the balance sheet. And we talked about some of this already. The district's total net position increased by a little over $5 million during this current fiscal year. And when I say current, we're in the time machine. We're talking June 30, 21. Net investment in capital assets increased $3.9 million, again, due mostly to that restatement that we discussed. And restricted net position increased $632,000 as restricted sources of revenue exceeded capital spending. And unrestricted net position increased roughly $442,000. Restricted cash and investments, which are the capital reserves designated for capital improvements and replacements, increased $664,000, and that's just the fees collected exceeded the capital project expenditures during this fiscal year. All right, and then if we flip over to page 7, you can see a comparative here of the income statement. Or as it's called for a government entity like the district, changes in net position, statement of changes in net position. So this is kind of a higher level look at revenues and expenses, but you can see total operating revenues increased about 5% year over year. Non-operating revenues decreased $65,000, and that's due largely to a decrease in interest earnings from the year prior to this. But I believe in December it was that the board approved some changes to the district's investment policy, and the investments are definitely in a lot better shape now than they were in fiscal year 2021. A lot higher rates of return coming in. And then we've got water operating expenses, excluding depreciation, increased $341,000. That's primarily due to increased costs for utilities, dam inspection, chemicals, water meters, and there was some pretty significant road paving and repairs that were recorded in that year. And then the sewer department, sewer operating expenses excluding depreciation actually went down a bit, $54,000, due to decreased salary and salary-related costs. And that was offset by increased costs for utilities and maintenance and repairs. Drainage department or drainage fund operating expenses increased about $17,000 over the prior year. And that was due to increases in legal, consulting, utilities, and chemicals, offset by some decreases in salary and salary-related costs. Solid waste operating expenses decreased about $45,000 over the prior fiscal year, and that was the result of lesser overall contract and other charges coded to that fund for the fiscal year ended 6/30/21. And then security department operating expenses for security services increased just shy of $50,000 year over year, and that increase was primarily related to increased costs for temporary staffing, maintenance of vehicles, equipment, and costs related to the safety center and IT related costs, and that those were offset by reduced salary and salary related costs, which makes sense that the temporary staffing costs increased. And then just overall general administrative costs decreased quite a bit from the prior year, about $855,000. And that decrease was due to a decrease in salary and salary-related costs, as well as consulting and legal fees. Okay, and then if we want to flip over then to page 11, and 11 and 12, and we've kind of visited this page already, but this is the district's statement of net position, or the balance sheet, as it's commonly known as, and we can touch on some of the highlights here. We've got so you can see it's segmented out here. So you know you got your assets. That's the first major category. Then you've got deferred outflows of resources. That's related to the pensions and the OPEB, which is other post-employment benefits. That's the health care that's paid for.
So that's a liability that's pending for future distribution.
Yeah.
We aren't like actually spending it in that fiscal year.
Right. And so what it is yes, you nailed it right on the head. And so the accounting rules say, oh, well, if it's a deferred use of resources, then you book that as an asset. And then you'll see the flip of that in the liability section. There is a deferred inflows of resources. And
that GASB requirement seems to me was implemented like 10 or 15 years ago.
It was 2011 or 2012.
Okay, yep. Relatively new development, as I recall.
So, yeah, and it's GASB 63, and you're absolutely right. It was 2011 or 2012, and it basically took items that just used to be lumped in with assets and liabilities, and it created two additional financial statement components, if you will. And so now this there's a deferred outflow component, and then there's a deferred inflow component. So, yeah, you're absolutely right on that. So then we got that liability section there. You know, and assets and liabilities are split between current and non-current, and then we've got net position, which is, it's, you know, a lot of people would know in business that that's your equity or your retained earnings, but for a government agency like the district, it's called net position. But it's really what you own above what you owe, right? So so one thing I always like to look at, or I think is important to look at, is your current assets minus your current liabilities, because that's really, you know, your ability to that's your assets that you have that are liquid, right? Meaning you could convert them to cash within the year, and your ability to use those to pay any obligations or liabilities over the next year. And so if you look at that current asset, and it's always important to kind of look at that far right total column, and we can talk about any individual fund as well, but a lot of these numbers I'm going to throw out are based on the total column. So the district's current assets exceeded current liabilities by $3.6 million, okay? And that's good to consider, because it shows that the district's well-equipped to cover any obligations in the coming year, right? And now that we're actually ahead of this, we know that the district made it through the next year. So
go back and say that again, and show me where you're looking.
Yeah, so so the numbers I'm looking at are, if you look at the assets section, and if you take your finger and you move down the far left, you come to a subtotal, total current assets. And then you take that all the way to the left in the total column, and you got your $5,299,461. Okay?
Nope, I'm not there.
It's the upper section, Martin, right here.
Oh, we're on page 11 and 12 also.
11 and 12?
Yep.
The 5 million, okay.
Okay. And so that's your current assets. And then you move down your finger down the left side under the liability section, and you see that first subtotal, that first subheading, total current liabilities.
Yes.
Okay. And then if you follow that all the way over to the right under the total column, that's $1,658,613.
Okay. So those numbers exclude capital assets. That's really just that's your fungible.
You got it. Yep.
It's your fungible assets.
You're absolutely correct. Yep. It's your assets that
God, you're teaching me today.
Well, there we go. You can convert those to cash. You convert those assets to cash within the year, so they're pretty liquid. And then those current liabilities are your obligations that are due within the year, right? So this is good. When you've got I think this is called the current ratio, maybe in high finance, but you've got your current assets exceeding your current liabilities. So what you have on hand that you can convert to cash relatively quick, exceeding your obligations by $3.6 million, that's a good position to be in from an operational standpoint.
Except that it doesn't represent the type of reserve that we would like to have in place for future.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. You're absolutely correct on that. So, and then
three for three.
That will be the next item that we talk about. Actually, is cash and investments restricted. So, if you take go on the far left, and you keep moving down, and you'll see there's a line item right underneath the other assets heading, and it's the first one in there. It's called cash and investments restricted.
Mm-hmm.
And then you follow that all the way to the far right under the total column, and you see that's $7,910,035. So just as you said, that is the reserves. That's the money that's the reserves. And actually, if you then go on the far left and you go all the way down to net position, that middle line in net position, restricted for capital projects, and then you look at the total, you can see that's the same $7,910,035. So that's those are district's reserves. Okay.
And what you said earlier was the reserves actually went up.
They did go up. They went up a little over $600,000. Yes.
Is that what we would expect from the $14 reserve amounts that go in every month?
Well, so there's a couple things going on, right?
Except
so that
for expenses.
The reserve money's coming in, and then there's capital expenditures going out, yeah. Right? And then there was the redesignation of a certain amount to clear those negative balances.
Okay.
The good news about those negative balances, and we talked about it before, is, you know, it was kind of like a battle on a lot of different fronts, right? Like, oh, we got this negative balances in the you know, operating category, and then you know, we have to build reserves, and now it's, you know, as long as operations pencil out, right, and don't have deficits, then now it's just, okay, now let's just focus on building those reserves, right? And so, and the financial statement is clean, okay? So, if we go to, okay, so then the next item here, we've talked about this a little bit, just net investment in capital assets. That's the district's property, plant, and equipment. And we talked about what that is. That's the property, plant, and equipment that the district owns, you know, less depreciation, and then less any outstanding debt that's on the books currently to purchase those assets. And I think for this financial statement, for this point in time, there was a very small balance of a loan left on a vehicle for security, and then there was a lease on a copier. So the loan is going to be paid off. Actually, I think the loan gets paid off in July 21. So, and then the copier lease goes for several more years. Okay, so let's flip over to page 13 and 14. This is the district's income statement, or as it's called for the type of entity that the district is, the statements of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position. Okay, and so this format might look somewhat familiar. This is when we all work together to try to reconfigure those monthly financials. The thought was, you know, it would be great if there's really just one, more or less one presentation of the financials for the district. So that way the audit doesn't look completely foreign every year. And the audit's actually set up to be pretty informative the way it splits out. Like, hey, this is what's going on in operations. Now, this is non-operating revenue and expense. This is items related to capital and the reserves. And then this is net position. So it was kind of with that eye that we developed and over a couple of months, that monthly financial statement. So this, hopefully this looks familiar to a certain extent to that. And what we've got here is, so you can see if we go down the left side, you've got operating revenues, okay? And then we've got operating expenses. And the accounting regulations, so on that monthly financial, you'll see salaries and repairs and maintenance and supplies. But the accounting rules are such that the district needs to report operating expenses by these functional categories. So source of supply, treatment, transmission and distribution, sewer collection, sewer treatment and disposal, drainage, and so on, okay? And then second from the bottom there, you see that general and administrative, and that's each operational area of the district has its own overhead associated with it, and then there's that just general overall overhead for the district that gets allocated out, okay? And we talked about that a lot and that allocation rate in January, I believe, and I believe it was also January the board approved switching to that indirect cost rate number 2 and then using that retroactively in any open year. So that has been applied to this year and to this audit, to this year's books, and it's reflected in this report. So you see the net income loss from operations there. There's that line. And then you've got your non-operating revenue and expenses. And just like we talked about last month for the monthly meeting, the big item in there is the taxes line item. And that taxes line item is the property tax assessments that the district receives. And then interest revenue. This was a rough year for interest earnings for the district. And it's it's definitely going a lot better. Year to date for fiscal year 2023-24, interest and investment earnings are over $100,000 already. So it's things are much better now than they were back in this year 2021 for that. This is also where you'll have something on, like if you dispose of equipment and it hasn't been fully depreciated yet, you'll record a loss on disposal of assets, and that occurred this year. And then the next section is that capital contributions section.
Before you go to that next session.
Sure.
So overall that year we ran $1.2 million in the red? Not counting capital.
From operations, it was 1.96. And then when we layer in the non-operating revenue and expense, which I think is important to do because the property tax assessments are coming in every year. So
and
yes,
we relied upon those heavily.
Yes, 1.2 in the red.
Okay.
Yep. And then capital contributions. We've got... This is the replacement reserves, is that first line item. That's the $14 fee that we mentioned earlier. Then we've got the debt reserve fee, that's the $6. Security impact fee, that's a fee that's assessed to specific developments that fall under the FSA agreements, okay? And then we've got water augmentation and capital improvement fees, and there's a percentage that goes to each one of those from the connection fees from new developments. Okay, and that's what all of those line items are. And so then we've got change in net position, and you can see overall change in net position for the district was a negative $324,000 for the year ended June 30, 21. And then we had those restatements for correction of errors that actually totaled $5.3 million to the plus. And so that ultimately resulted in that little over $5 million increase in net position for the district for this fiscal year. All right. The next statement, page 15 and 16, this is the statement of cash flows, and actually this spills over onto 17 and 18. What this does, really the key line item on here is if you go almost to the bottom, so if you go on the left side and you scroll your finger all the way down and you get to that all cap heading near the bottom called increase, decrease in cash and cash equivalents. And then you go all the way, it's actually, if you go all the way to the right under the total column, it's the third number from the bottom. That says that the district increased its cash and cash equivalents $2.1 million over the year.
How does that happen when you're $324,000 in the red on the previous page?
It's just the difference between accrual basis accounting and if you were to go straight cash basis.
Sounds like voodoo economics.
Yeah, that's it. Bueller, right? Yeah. So if you flip over to 19 and 20, this is basically the balance sheet and income statement for the facilities district, the CFD 2014-1. So it's just presented in here because the CSD is responsible for maintaining these cash balances. So it has a fiduciary responsibility. So these are just footnoted in here, but they aren't part of the actual CSD financials. Okay, and then if we flip over to 21, this is the start of the financial statement footnotes. There's actually a lot of good information in here. You know, if you want to really get into the, accounting policies and the, estimates that are made and the different rules that are being followed. And yeah, so we can flip through that. Well, I guess I'll just leave it there. I mean, are there any questions up to this point on the financials?
One that caught my eye was that we lost $323,000 in this fiscal year. Do we have something to relate it to, like the previous year?
Yeah. So let's see. If we go back to that MD&A, page 7. So on page 7, you've got your year-over-year. This is why I did a lot of the discussion about the balance sheet and income statement in the MD&A section, because this section you have your year-over-year analysis. And so if you look there on page 7, that's year-over-year. So the fiscal year 2021 had a negative $324,000 roughly, but 1920 had a negative $970,000. One thing I do want to point out actually is page 45, and page 45 is the independent auditor's report on internal controls over the financial reporting and compliance and other matters. And this is really where the auditors, you know, during the course of their audit, they'll assess, you know, the accounting function and internal controls and, you know, and then they'll provide some recommendations. Okay, so if you look at page 47 are their current year findings, okay? And they had two findings that they call material weakness and internal control. And I just want to make sure that we have a chance to discuss those. So the first one is year-end closing procedures, and the auditors they report here the audit was delayed because of delays in producing closing entries, trial balances, schedules, reconciliations, account analyses, and other financial reports needed by management and the auditors due to the district having difficulty finding qualified staff. And they say to ensure the year-end closing process proceeds more quickly and smoothly, they recommend developing a checklist that indicates who will perform each procedure, when completion of each procedure is due and accomplished. The district needs to ensure that all balance sheet accounts are reviewed and reconciled to supporting schedules and are reviewed and approved prior to beginning the audit. So, you know, that goes to the year-end closing process and getting the audit done timely, but, I mean, really, it kind of just speaks to just the overall ongoing day-to-day accounting.
So, Mark, does that speak to that $3.2 million figure that you all started to try to reconcile on that persistent $123,000 that you had to really dig deep to ferret out?
It does. Yeah, it does. So just wanted to note, and I mean, we wrote a response to that. I mean, totally agree. And, you know, we're putting checklists in place, we're standardizing you know, a whole list of journal entries. You know, it doesn't have to be a mystery every month. I mean, an organization like the district, it's pretty standard month over month, and then, you know, every once in a while something different happens, but in my mind, that's really the only way to run an accounting shop, is to have a standard checklist. This is the journal entries we do every month, this is who does them, and then we reconcile the balance sheet every month to make sure that we're on track. So totally agree with their comment there. It needs to be done. And, you know, this process of really diving into this audit has really enabled me to learn a lot about everything that's going on financially with the district. And so we're getting that up and running, you know, and that's part of the reason why we're able to produce those monthly financials now and all of that. So just want you to know that's completely being addressed. And this is, you know, we wholeheartedly agree with this comment and this recommendation that they've put in. And then the other one is, and we've talked about this several times. Mimi mentioned it, and then I've mentioned it a couple times with their correction of prior year errors. This is just the developing a procedure to account for that infrastructure and those easements that might come from developers finishing their different developments. And
so the corrective measures that have been implemented to address that first finding is really, in my mind, what is most important to being accountable to the ratepayer community. Because that's what we were lacking for all this time. And again, the fact that now we're producing those monthly expense to budget reports will prevent that in future years.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah, I mean, frankly, I don't know any other way to do it. I mean, otherwise you don't know what's going on. No. So yeah, I totally agree. And so that was the other finding, though. Just again, we've talked about that, recording the donations of infrastructure, and then if there's some kind of an easement that occurs related to that, or if there's an other kind of easement with the irrigation easement that the district received several years ago, we just need to make sure that we're identifying those and that we're recording those. And we've had some conversations about that.
So as we've discussed previously, and I know I was one that has asked this question repeatedly of various people, we didn't find that there was any criminal activity, but we sure found a whole bunch of negligent activity. Fair statement?
I would say that's fair. Yeah, I would say that's fair.
So on the second finding, I remember correctly, last time the developer gave us some infrastructure, Michael kind of formalized that process, and we're going to continue with that. What's going to happen with the ones that still need to come over? Do we have all the data?
So what we're doing right now is we are going back in time and looking at any time a new development came online. And then, you know, that's step one. And then step two is trying to determine what, if anything, well, I mean, all of them, there's going to be something, right? And then trying to come up with a reasonable basis to assign a value to it, and then record it.
So you don't think we had, the last one I remember, the developer gave us a value, right?
Yeah. That would probably be the best basis for valuing it, right? Because they paid for it, so they could tell us, hey, this is what it cost. So that's...
But we may not have that for some of the ones that haven't been brought over yet.
You're right. So we're going to have to look at those and do some kind of...
quantities of what they gave us.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to take those quantities and change them to values.
Yeah.
So those transfers are all documented. They just weren't recorded as assets?
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
I think just the overall event, going back in history and seeing the events, right? So everybody knows when, oh, this additional development occurred in this year. Then we'll look at that and say, okay, well, what information do we have? In some cases, hopefully we do have that information in there somewhere. In some cases, we probably won't. And then we're going to have to just use what's available to us to try to come up with an answer, right, to evaluation. And so that could mean, well, let's look at other similar developments where we did get the costs or we did get the valuation. Can we do a comparative analysis on that and then use that as a reasonable basis for our valuation? Maybe we can contact the developer in some cases and ask. So it's just going to be on a case-by-case basis going back and trying to determine what it is.
So Michael updated our GIS based on some of those old developments. So when they put it into the GIS, they had quantities, right?
Okay. Yeah, and he's...
And you could use those quantities. Right?
Okay.
And is that research, Mimi, that would be tasked to operations or to finance, do you think?
Well, I've asked operations to just create a list of all the dates that developments went online so that we can do a couple of things. One, to make sure that we got the infrastructure on the books in the right year, and then also to make sure that we got all of the related connection fees, including the security impact fees and the water connection fees, and that they were booked appropriately. So I think given the...
Are there remedies if we did not?
Well, we can go back and make corrective entries. You know, that's most easily done with the open books. But at least we can bring forward any values for infrastructure and add that to the PP&E. With regard to the reserves, that's a little bit more of a, you know, an accounting mystery to try to do the forensics and figure out, well, okay, did this get credited to the right fund, so we can do all that kind of cleanup. Because I think that's the essence of that first finding, is that because it was in such disarray, you don't really have a good handle on where everything was deposited and credited to. So that's our big mission. I think 2021 is a little bit of a dumpster fire, but it does show that it didn't have as big a loss as the year before, which I think is kind of a low bar. But the other takeaway that I see from 2021 that really relates to the necessity of having budget to actual oversight and why you have management information reports is that admin line was budgeted at like 1.8 and it bloated up to about 3.1. And that is like a $1.3 million difference, you know, that really is a big chunk of that operating deficit of 1.9, right? So the goal on my part as, looking at admin is that we get that admin lean and mean, right? So that the organization is operating in the black as much as possible. Because to the extent that you have a component of the cost that is throwing it into the red, that results in the necessity to raise rates, that doesn't help the ratepayer at all. It just makes us make them pay for inefficiencies, and I think that all of us don't want to put that on the ratepayers. So that's I think a big takeaway is that we're going to probably see that again in 21-22. And to a certain extent in 22-23, but then after we get outside of that window of sort of operating in the dark without knowing where we're at, I think then we'll get to a position where it can actually be operating in the black and accumulating reserves so that, you know, these things that we need can be paid for. That's my assessment of the situation.
And you've just zeroed in on a point of significant criticism from the community over the last few years, and that is what was perceived as a significant inflation of administrative costs relative to, you know, the operating costs of our five programs. So I know that in the short time you've been here, you've implemented some cost savings activity, you've implemented some revenue enhancement, and I think when we look at the end of this year, I think that comparison going back to this audit is going to be very favorable.
Yeah, that's the goal, to utilize effectively your revenues, find other non-rate increase revenues, decrease expenses, improve efficiencies, you know, sort of a trifecta of different ways to tackle the issue of making it be fairly self-sufficient, and then just dump those property taxes into your reserves easily, and then get back on an even keel with them.
Can we see your statement about increase in admin costs on page 7?
So on page 14.
14?
On page 14 on the far column of where it says total, there's an admin, general and administrative line item there of 3. 072569, $3,072,569.
That shows up on page 7, too, the same number.
Yeah.
But probably. The previous year was 3.9. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that, the budget was one, the budget, right? So these are actual figures. The 3.072 is actual. The budget was $1,825,904. Oh. And Director Booth, you've asked about this before, too, because you've seen like all these different numbers for whatever, admin or security, but it's the point in time when those numbers occur, right? So this was the budget, this was what was intended, and instead of it being kept at 1,825, it actually grew to 3 million. So that's where you, if you don't have the visibility from monthly reports, you know, you as a board can't say, well, what's going on here? Why are we overspending? You know, so it really underscores the necessity of having good financial reports, budget to actual.
And that number represents 35% of the total operating budget for that year.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is very high.
Yes.
I mean, my experience is that 12 to 15% is sort of the sweet spot for indirect cost in general for an organization. So this was fairly large, and so that's what we're trying to, you know, keep on a diet in terms of more, you know, more realistic indirect costs.
Not to beat a dead horse, but that's why I voted no last week on the proposal for a new position that loaded is going to cost us $184,000.
Yeah, that goes to my third point, increased efficiencies.
No, I understand.
So,
and then we'll see how that books out. I'm hopeful that you are correct.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay, that concludes my presentation. If you have any other questions, I'm happy to talk about the financials more or any other part of them.
So, what's the schedule for the next audits?
Well, we're gonna dive in and start on 21-22, and I think that we'll be able to a certain degree do 21-22 and 22-23 kind of in tandem, but we just have to see, you know, we just have to see what's in there waiting for us. You know, it's sometimes it can be a bit of a puzzle to get in there, and if there's things that are not posted correctly in the accounting records and there's a lot of cleanup to do and research on what was this and why is it in here this way, then it can just drag out a little bit longer. So we'll be diving into that, though.
How long were the completed records in the hands of Richardson before they issued this report?
And there was some back and forth, but probably about 3 weeks. Whenever we told you that we had sent it over there, I think maybe the last finance committee meeting, right?
Yeah, I think it might have been late January.
Yeah.
But they got the trial balance back in maybe May, April or May.
Well, I know. And then they had those 79 punch items.
Well, and so that's was an issue with this one, because when I started on this, there were at least three different versions of the trial balance floating around, and it was like trying to hit a moving target. So this one, at least Richardson and the district are on the same page, and then we'll roll forward. We'll close 2021 in the accounting records, and we'll roll forward, and we'll start the next year the same. And then it's just a matter of, I think probably the most efficient way to do this is to really just operate it like your checkbook at home and just go through the bank statements, and then just trace the bank statement transactions to all the throughout the GL and make sure everything was posting. Okay? And it can take a while to do, and then but it's relatively straightforward, and it's just, you know, it just takes time. And then depending on what's posted in there, you know, unwinding that is going to be a factor. And then I will say, I think the biggest challenge right now, so in accounting, you've got your like accounting general ledger, which is what you spit out the trial balance and you know, that's what you give the auditors, that's what the financial statements are prepared from, and that's like your main ledger for your accounting, right? But then you've got these subsidiary ledgers, right? There's like a payroll ledger, there's a checkbook, you know, accounts payable ledger, there's an accounts receivable where you do all your billing from, and then there's a fixed asset ledger, right? So we're in a situation where the only thing that's really talking to the general ledger is the checkbook when we pay bills, right? So that's, you know, maybe it's a little too much inside baseball, but I mean, that's kind of like where, that's really the thing that I'm confident is correct in there is paying the bills, like writing checks to pay the bills. And then everything else needs a review and a comprehensive review to make sure that it's correct, right? Or that it's complete, okay? And that's another problem. And then the one that I'm really, that's going to take some time, but once we get it fixed for 21-22, then we're off to the races, and that's kind of going to be the process for this one, right? The 21-22 year, the way I see it, is I feel like we've got the knowledge now of how everything's supposed to be posted, how everything's supposed to be posted across the funds, how the different reserve buckets are working, right? And we've come up with a lot of changes in posting methodology to make sure that money coming in, you know, we went down that capital contributions part of the income statement. Well, each one of those needs to post a certain way to the different reserve buckets, okay? And so we've got that figured out. We've mapped all that in the GL now, right? So I think this, and that was kind of the big accomplishment for the 2021 year, right? Knowledge, gaining that knowledge, and then cleaning up some of the posting in the GL. The accomplishment for the 21-22 audit is going to be getting those subledgers talking to the general ledger properly. And the big one that's going to be the challenge is the fixed assets, the property, plant, and equipment. We went into that subledger, and it looks like it's been quite a while since it was actually, the subledger was updated. The general ledger is getting things posted to it, but it's not going to tie to the subledger. And the subledger is where you say, hey, what's a list of all our equipment that we have? And you run it, and you should have just like a list of all the property, plant, and equipment that we have. And it's out of whack. And so it could be like a week to get that figured out. It could be like a couple of months to get it figured out. It's just, but that's going to be the big, in my mind, going forward into this next audit, into closing this next year of accounting records, that I think is the biggest challenge. Now, it can totally be done, and we will do it, but it's just, you know, it might be taking a list and going out and inventorying our fixed assets, which is something that should be done periodically at every company, and it was actually a finding, an internal control finding last year, from the auditors, and I don't think it's been done yet, it needs to be done, and then we need to get the subledger balancing out to the books at 6/30/21, right? And then it's like, okay, well now what did we buy, right? And then, boom, then we're off to the races. And then, so once that's all done, then it should be pretty straightforward going forward. But that's the next big kind of cleanup project. That, some of this historical stuff that we talked about, and posting those easements and infrastructure that's been donated over that hasn't been recorded in the past. And then just those subledgers talking to the general ledger. So that's, once that's squared away, then it's pretty straightforward accounting operation. But it's just a matter of cleaning all that up.
So we essentially have three outstanding audits to go. Right?
I think
we will have three audits in about three or four more months. Yeah, because 23-24 will be teed up for completion in, you know, June 30th. So then we'll do 21-22, 22-23. Yeah,
two of them.
And then 23-24 realistically would be like by December. Usually it's like 6 months. Mm-hmm. So you have 2021 that took 21 months. I'm thinking 21-22, 22-23. Maybe that's half that at most. Maybe it's 9 months. Maybe, you know. But I think, as Mark said, you know, there are just a few big components to the overall expenditures, and that's personnel and what you buy, right? And personnel represents about 50% of the costs here. And for 22-23, we've already done the cleanup on distributing the cost. So that one's going to be a piece of cake. And then 21-22, we're working on getting that ready to clean up the distribution of that cost. And then it's just the what we bought. So, yeah.
So do you have to finalize those, at least the two audits, before you can have some confidence in the reserve balances?
Well, what I see is actual assets that exceed that reserve balance, which tells me that we've had some accumulation, right? So, but it's just a matter of, like, how much, you know? But that's what makes me feel confident, you know, that we're in a good position, a better position, that we're going to be moving forward to, you know, operating in the black, and that we will have, you know, reserves that are a good starting place, that are bigger than what we just showed you in the end of 2021.
You know, and part of the project to identify some of these historical items that need to be posted, we are trying to come up with a roll forward of what the reserve balance looks like, so we can start presenting that to you, but it will just always be caveated with, you know, there's X number of years that aren't officially closed yet, and this is an estimate, but it should be a good estimate, and that's something that we're working on, is getting a roll forward. Now that we have some solid reserve numbers at 6/30/21, we should be able to produce just a roll forward and say, hey, this is an estimate, because we still have these years outstanding to be closed, but yeah, you know, it should be good. That compared to the balances in the specific accounts should give you some good information to make decisions on.
I would agree. An estimate is better than what we have right now. So
yeah.
So at least if you know it's an estimate, then you can be a bit conservative in what you want to spend.
Yeah.
But at least you got some sort of educated guess.
And that's what we're trying to do every day is you know, kind of tackle the bigger, more detailed, comprehensive projects of getting the accounting squared away and then also finished and then the audit's done, but then also with an eye towards every time we come back together for this committee or for the board, you know, giving you more, better quality financial information that you can use to make decisions. So it's, you know,
Do we have a target value that's based on industry standard for what our reserves should look like? I know the grand jury last year put out a number that I personally found to be arbitrary. They didn't offer up any analysis on why that particular dollar figure. And so if we don't have a target in mind, maybe it's something that we should be looking for as we improve our financial historical records. What's the industry standard? And I know that's going to be difficult also, because we are so complex with different programs.
Yeah, actually that's something that is behind the contract for Lumos, which is to figure out, because reserves are generally intended to be for anticipated future expenditures. And so those future expenditures are usually a function of the life expectancy of your current plant and equipment. Like, when is this going to fail? And
just plus stuff happens.
Yeah, plus stuff happens. Yeah. But, you know, like, if people did this in their own homes, they'd be like, okay, we're going to need a new dishwasher in, you know, 20 years. Oh, we're going to need a new roof, right? It's not a very fun exercise, because it's just like, ooh, looming costs. But that gives us concrete, specific information to the extent that these products or these pieces of equipment last as long as they're supposed to with proper maintenance, right? And so that will give us, like, how much we need. And then that'll be the target to drive towards. because I agree with you, like with the grand jury report, it's unclear to me on what basis they made that, except maybe they compared like another small district of comparable size and just said, you know, 20 million. But generally, you know, there is this practice, and we did this at the Judicial Council through the whole portfolio, of having all of the little bits and pieces and what their expected life was and what year that would end, and then the cost of replacement. And so there's a lot of variables there. You know, will it last that long? What is going to be the cost of replacement? All those things that build into making this either a valid estimate or, you know, less valid. And but that then gives you at least something to know, like we should have a little piggy bank of this amount in order to be ready to tackle whatever comes. So that's kind of where we're at. So that is a little bit more than more specific than an industry standard, because it's based on, well, what is all of our stuff?
Can I go back to the budget? Did you say that you're going to give us the first crack at the budget at the next finance committee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it needs to go out when?
Well, I wanted us to have at least one vote by June 5th, or one introducing it by June 5th. But the 218 would have to happen, I think, in April.
Okay, so it gives us a month to finalize the 218?
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm going to research that. But I think you have to have two readings of the budget, and you have to have it be approved by July 1st. So I'm kind of toying with the idea of having a May budget introduction of the budget, and then maybe the vote on the June. We're talking about having a rescheduling of the board meeting in June because of people being out in June for the regularly scheduled meeting. So this is all sort of tentative kind of potential planning. But yeah, we'd have two readings of the budget. We'd have to have the time for the 218 protest, and then having the proposed 24-25 by next finance committee, which is actually going to be early April, and then we'd have, yeah, so it's right on top of it. If we can get anything as a rough by March 20th, we will, but then it won't have come through the finance committee. And this is kind of complicated because of my absence for a little bit.
Yeah, well, we moved the March Finance Committee meeting up to today, which cut everybody a little short. I don't recall what's the number of days in advance of a rate increase we have to put a 218 out.
I have that just as
45.
A ballpark.
Is it 45?
Is it 45? Okay, so if we did April, I think that's why the April meeting is the key one. So then it's April to May, then May to June.
No, I think April 17, which is our normally scheduled day for CSD, probably is inside that 45 days.
Okay. To 6-5.
I think that's a 43 day. Well, we got May now. May is 31. No, we got more than 45. So. Days in June, and then 15 days back into May.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
No, I thank you both for your diligence in getting this first one out of the way.
All right.
Do we have any comments from the public? Hearing none?
No. Doesn't look good.
I don't have any more comments. You just said you didn't.
Correct.
So we're adjourned. Thank you for the presentation. That was good.
All right. Thank you.